for a good job. Okay, item 15, status of the Los Osos wastewater project and water balance in the Los Osos groundwater basin. Where is everything?
It's over here. You want to go with 2 minutes?
Let's see how many. Folks, what we're going to do is limit the amount of public comment on this, not to be charged against however much time our staff takes or the county takes to present their part of this, but just in the public speakers that wish to speak on this. So I want all the cards in right now because I'm going to cut off any additional cards being submitted so that everybody can get an equal amount of time. So if anyone wishes to address the board on this agenda item 15, please come forward and give us your speaker card. Okay. Okay. Are there additional cards? Okay. Okay, and folks, those of you that have given me cards, the topic is saltwater intrusion. And so if you wanted to talk about anything else, you're going to need to do it during our public comment period that's after this agenda item, sometime after this agenda item. The issues for this agenda item are the proposed wastewater plant and the disposal or reuse of the effluent and saltwater intrusion. That's what this is about. Well, I'll just change this, Mr. Payne, to this one. Okay, your card's fine. You want to talk at public comment about something unrelated to saltwater intrusion?
My card and on the back of it is unrelated to saltwater intrusion.
That's okay. That's okay.
Okay, well, I can address saltwater intrusion when I speak.
I'm sure you can. Okay. All right, that's it for the cards. Okay, we have 26 cards, and so that'll be, we're going to do 2 minutes each, and that'll probably take us right up maybe a little bit more than an hour's worth of time with the transition. Let's go ahead with the staff report on this and the county's report.
All right. David Licaro of our staff will be making our presentation this morning.
Okay.
Thanks, Roger. I don't know if you can hear me on this thing.
No, it's not been very good.
We've pegged it as much as possible, but for some reason it seems to be either a bad connection or would it be better if I sat here then or if I spoke up instead?
I'd assume for public comment, we'll have to do something with a remote mic or a different mic altogether. All right. Well, I guess in the interest of time, we'll go ahead and get started then. Good afternoon, Chair Young, members of the board. My name is David LaCaro. I work in the Wastewater Compliance Group. I'll be the lead staff in charge of developing waste discharge requirements for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. I'd like to take this opportunity to commend the county and their efforts to bringing forth a project for the Los Osos community. You know, this has been a long road for all the stakeholders that are involved in bringing a solution forward. The county is addressing a complex situation, obviously, and is currently undergoing extensive review in order to determine the best project. So, Water Board staff's been participating in some of these discussions. However, we don't mandate the manner of compliance, and as it would undermine the county's process in determining the best project. So at this point, we eagerly await their formal application so that we can begin the process and evaluation of appropriate waste discharge requirements. So the purpose of today is to provide an update of the Los Osos Wastewater Project and its relationship to the groundwater basin. On February 5th, 2009, you folks received numerous comments from public forum regarding the project and its potential impacts to groundwater, specifically seawater intrusion into the lower basin. Further, the public commented on the current rate of seawater intrusion and how this rate may increase as a result of the ceasing or at least the removal of septic system discharges into the Los Osos Basin. So as a result of the public forum, staff was directed to provide a status for the Water Board in regards to the wastewater project, discussion of current water conservation efforts, mitigation efforts for seawater intrusion, and of course, our authority as the regional board as it relates to this project. So the regional board maintains authority to regulate discharges associated with this project. And here in this slide, I have a brief list of regulatory tools that we'll most likely be using towards an approval of this project. First is waste discharge requirements. It's going to be very similar to what you've approved back in February 7, 2003. In fact, we'll most likely use that as the starting place and then from that point update requirements as we see it move along as it has evolved. Of course, we haven't seen a formal application yet, so we haven't been able to begin that process. And second, we have stormwater, and I'll go very briefly over this. Of course, they'll be required to obtain construction stormwater permits, which would obligate the county to develop a stormwater pollution prevention plan that would include best management practices for erosion control, sediment control, waste management, and materials management. And then on a bigger scale, our Water Board staff, not myself, but stormwater staff specifically will work with the county to ensure that best management practices that are identified in the county's municipal stormwater management plan will be implemented with this project, i.e. low-impact development. This has been a big discussion today, so I figured we can add that in there as well. And lastly, the county's recently discussed the option of increasing their treatment level to provide tertiary-treated recycled water. We're obviously pleased that the county is considering this tertiary treatment as it'll allow for more disposal options as well as future opportunities for reuse, such as recycled water reuse. In accordance with the recycled water policy that was adopted by the State Board February of this year, 2009, quote, recycled water of adequate quality shall be used towards a beneficial use. And we've met with the county and the local water purveyors, at least the primary water purveyors, and discussed this policy so they are aware of the provisions that are held within the policy. Once the Office of Administrative Law approves this policy, then the local stakeholders will be required to develop a groundwater basin-specific salt nutrient management plan. And, of course, this is to be a collaborative effort with regional board staff, along with Department of Public Health staff and other agencies. I feel it's also important to make sure that we have this distinction. Of course, this is black and white. There's a lot of gray area. But, you know, on February 5th, 2009, at that meeting, there were a lot of issues that were brought up that I feel that we should show that are really not under our purview. As you'll see up there, we have water use as a result of groundwater production, water conservation, and seawater intrusion, which is actually caused by overdraft conditions or overpumping of the lower basin. These issues are really under the jurisdiction of the county and the water purveyors, the local purveyors there. From that standpoint,
and ultimately the State Water Resources Control Board.
The State Water Control Board has limited jurisdiction. I think we had talked about this before.
The State Water Board would have jurisdiction in certain circumstances over pumping of groundwater, and the courts have jurisdiction over pumping of groundwater.
The county and water purveyors are here sitting with me now. I figured it would be appropriate to have them participate. They accepted the invite to today's meeting. I anticipate that the county here will be able to talk with more detail as far as the status of the wastewater project, the review process for CEQA, certification, finances, those types of things. Likewise, the water purveyors, or at least the water purveyor representative today, we'll be able to speak in regards to seawater intrusion, current conditions of the basin. They also have provided in their slides, and as you'll see, I don't have slides with cross sections and maps, but they do have those available for reference, and so they'll be able to show that as well. So with that, we continue to work with the county and on these issues as it pertains to the project. And with that, I can turn it over to the county. And Pavo Ogren will go ahead and start. Thanks, Pavo.
Thank you, David. Is this one working? Is
the one turned on?
Hello?
That works better.
There we go. Success. Good afternoon. I'm Pavo Ogren, Public Works Director for the County of San Luis Obispo. Thank you, Chairman Young and Regional Board, for having us today. Supervisor Gibson was here in the morning, but due to other conflicts this afternoon, he wasn't able to be here this afternoon, and would also wanted me to express the appreciation for today's meeting. John Waddell, who's our project engineer, will be leading our portion of the discussion. And then Rob Miller, who's the district engineer for the LOCSD, will lead the water side of it. Rob is also working on the project on behalf of the county. The CSD and the county signed off on the conflict of interest so that Rob could help us with the project as well. Dave sort of summarized what John's going to cover, project status report. The one issue that John has included also is some of the results of the community survey that we had that had been expressed as an interest of the regional board. If you want us to keep it on the technical issues, we can certainly do so, especially considering time, and John can flip through those slides. But he was also prepared to cover some of the results of the community survey, and it's whatever is the pleasure of your board. I'll be available for questions and answers, and turn it over to John at this time.
Afternoon, board members. I'm John Waddell, Public Works Department, and I'll go ahead and go through the presentation, including the survey, and unless you'd like me to I'll move through that portion quickly. So we are going to be providing a status update where we currently are on the project, and then addressing some individual board member questions that we received from your staff, including the community survey, and then how the project relates to sustainable water resources, and then the county's due diligence process under Assembly Bill 2701. So in the last couple months, we've prepared the final EIR, as well as completed our coastal development permit application, and also prepared a draft facilities plan for the State Water Board's State Revolving Fund Loan Program. And we are currently in the midst of the Planning Commission hearings on the final EIR and the coastal development permit. And we've had two hearings, and the hearings have been continued, and so we are in progress with that. On the design-build contracting process, We released an RFQ this winter and have established a short list of pre-qualified design-build contractors, and then our draft request for proposals is in progress. It's not yet released. Now, we expect to get further along in the hearing process on the EIR and CDP before we release that. And just as a reminder on the design-build process, we're following Public Contract Code, Section 20133, which allows counties to use design-build contracting for wastewater projects. We're also following the State Water Board's SRF guidelines, and then they specify using the Design-Build Institute of America, their manual of practice. Design-Build Institute of America, DBIA, is the industry standard and organization that promotes and is all things design-build for the construction industry in the United States. Also, we did conduct a community survey this winter, and the results have been compiled, and a report has been released to our board and to the public. On the community survey, we sent out approximately 8,100 surveys. Were mailed to property owners and also businesses and residents, renters and those who do not own property, and within the entire community of Los Osos, not just within the prohibition zone. We had a 34% overall return rate. Typical return rate on a mail-in survey is about 10 to 15%, so we had an excellent return rate. And then looking at those property owners in the prohibition zone who would be subject to regional board enforcement action and also to the assessments for the sewer project, we have had a 40% return rate. One of the key questions we asked in the survey is which components or which one component are you most concerned about of the project? We had five key areas that we focused on in our project development, and the overwhelming concerns were for the collection system technology and the siting of the treatment plant. On the collection system, there was overwhelming support for a gravity collection system or a gravity hybrid. The two key technologies being considered in the evaluation process were gravity and a step stake system, and 52% definitely supported gravity collection. We also asked cost-sensitive question relating to the collection systems. Our engineering estimates indicated that there were potential savings with a step-stake system, although there also would be potentially more impacts on individual properties. So the question of how much savings over a gravity step system, over a gravity system, would a step-stake system have to provide to make it worthwhile? 48% preferred a gravity system regardless of any step savings. You can see that the middle three bars are really where the cost-dependent answers are. About 26% of the respondents did have a cost-dependent preference, and then there was also about 16 that did not express an opinion. On the treatment plant location, posed out-of-town treatment plant site, which is the Tonini property, which is what is identified as our environmentally superior project and is the identified site in our coastal development permit application. That was a clear favorite. However, Giacomazzi property behind the cemetery in Los Osos also seems to be acceptable. We asked one other question related to cost sensitivity of some potential amendments or improvements on the project. And the one that there seemed to be clear support for at 65% were that respondents were willing to spend something for a project that returned treated water to the groundwater basin for reuse. Overall, the results of the community survey were not surprising. They were consistent with our analysis and what just the read we've had on the with the community throughout our project development, and also they were largely decisive with large margins of large margins being evident in the survey results. Moving on to the question of sustainable water resources and how they relate to the project, this just is a list of the project objectives that have been identified through the project EIR. As you'll see, the primary objectives really relate to your board's prohibition of septic tank discharges within the prohibition zone. On the other project objectives, there's ones that speak to environment and cost. But I want to focus your attention on that first one under other project objectives, highlighted here, to mitigate the project's impacts on water supply and saltwater intrusion and maintain the widest possible options for beneficial reuse of treated effluent. So as we approached the project, we considered a number of disposal options. Some of them have been deemed infeasible for permitting reasons through whether it's the regional board or the Coastal Commission. Those would include an ocean outfall or other surface water discharge to creeks. Under reclamation, the idea of reclamation for direct potable water reuse, not deemed feasible. Constructed wetlands and injection wells, also not deemed feasible. So the proposed project includes percolation through leach fields at the Broderson site and spray fields at the Tonini site. Also identified recycled water reuse options, both for agriculture and in the urban area, as potential future options that would be available through the wastewater project, but require other partners, whether that's the water purveyors or local farmers and owners of ag property, and so are not included in the project proposal, but again are potential future options that are not precluded. And so spray fields were specifically identified as the project safety valve, as the disposal option that is needed to provide full capacity for the project.
John, can I ask a quick question on that table? What you've got future options ag and future options urban reuse, and you've listed acre feet per year potential. What are those numbers based on?
Those numbers are based on the potential reuse quantity within over the groundwater basin. So urban reuse, basically all of the urban area is over the groundwater basin. And for agricultural reuse, that would be that agricultural property that is over the groundwater basin, so in essentially the Creek Valley area. Further east of Los Osos is not over the groundwater basin. Certainly are reuse opportunities in that area, but would not have a direct benefit on water supplies within the groundwater basin.
So 133 urban reuse is based on identified locations or acreage that's available for recharge or what?
No, for actual irrigation reuse, so schools, golf courses, parks, and it's the large users, not individual residences.
So purple pipe?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
John, since we're stopped on this slide and I stopped the clock, and I had a question from someone about this issue, and so it's an opportune time to bring it up. You said as far as ocean outfall and surface water discharge that they're not permittable. I think you mentioned us, the Coastal Commission, other regulatory constraints. And technically speaking, if you were to provide an application for either of those, we would write requirements to be protective of those surface waters. Certainly, ocean outfall doesn't seem like it makes a whole lot of sense for other reasons, but one being cost, one being fresh water going to the ocean. For surface water discharge, we permit discharges of both ocean outfalls and surface water discharges up and down the region. Not very many to inland waters because there's a lot of liability associated with inland water discharges because of the stringency of the requirements, and because with an NPDES permit you have mandatory minimum penalties, so any little hiccup and you're subject to penalties with no discretion on our part. So there's certainly a lot of liabilities associated with that. But from our standpoint, it's not fair to say they're just not permittable as far as we're concerned. I know you said other agencies as well.
Right. I agree that there's both regional board has jurisdiction over these types of discharges, but also other agencies, and including Coastal Commission. So we're looking at the range of permitting agencies and what it would be feasible. We actually, as this project, as we evaluated feasibility, we're using the the definition of feasible out of our local coastal plan, which says that feasibility is capable of being accomplished in a successful manner within a reasonable period of time, and then taking into account economic, environmental, social, and technological factors. And so to pursue those types of discharges, we also believe would cause undue delays on the project in getting those permits.
Thanks.
Okay. So the proposed project, as the disposal package, includes 160 acre feet of conservation, reducing the disposal requirements and also just overall benefit to the water supplies. 448 acre feet a year of percolation at the Broderson site, which is in the community and returns water to the groundwater basin and both to the upper aquifer and to the lower aquifer. And then 842 acre feet a year, this would be at build out at spray fields at the Tonini site. The important point here is that, you know, currently with septic tank discharges in the community, there's about 1,900 acre feet a year of outflow from the upper aquifer that is flowing into the creeks, into the bay. With the construction of the project at the current population levels, even with using spray fields, there would still be a remaining 1,300 acre feet a year of excess groundwater that will be flowing out to the bay and the creeks. So even with spray fields and sending some of the water out of the basin for disposal, there's still a large amount of excess water in the upper aquifer. It's the lower aquifer that is currently experiencing overdraft conditions through seawater intrusion. And to that, on that issue, the project provides a 2-to-1 mitigation of seawater intrusion. Even though the septic tank discharges do help to mitigate seawater intrusion by increasing the water level in the upper aquifer, and then by increasing subsurface leakage from the upper aquifer to the lower aquifer, removing those septic tank discharges would have a potential impact on seawater intrusion, potential increase of about 90 acre feet per year. So the project mitigates that by, first of all, through conservation. By conserving 160 acre feet a year and reducing pumping, is expected to mitigate seawater intrusion by about 90 acre feet per year. So a 1-to-1 mitigation there. And then through the percolation at Broderson, some of that water is transmitted to the lower aquifer and also mitigates seawater intrusion by about 90 or 100 acre feet a year. So the net there is a 2-to-1 mitigation of seawater intrusion with the project. And then also by collecting and treating and to Title 22 tertiary recycled water, we maintain options for beneficial reuse throughout the community, and as I said, with partners in the community, other partners, agriculture or the water purveyors, the ones who would actually be using the recycled water. A few more details on water conservation. The project would provide over 10% water conservation, and this is a significant first step in water conservation efforts, and it's significant ways toward the goal, the statewide goal of 20% water conservation, and then even beyond. What's included with the project in the EIR description are bathroom retrofits, toilets, and shower heads, also public education and promoting high efficiency appliances like washing machines. And these would result in approximately 160 acre feet per year of savings at build out. In the draft facilities plan, some other measures have been identified, including retrofit of commercial properties and like restaurant spray valves, and then potentially new ordinances for new development in regarding water efficiency. And through those elements in the draft facilities plan, may actually be able to provide up to 370 acre feet a year of conservation at build out. And then on the recycling, water recycling.
Question for you.
Yes.
On that slide. Why does that middle part have to have any connection to the project itself? In other words, can't you do the conservation elements independent of the wastewater plant?
Well,
just start them?
Right. Certainly, there is conservation measures that can be done independent of the the wastewater project. The water purveyors have begun some of those, and Rob will be speaking to that in a minute. But as part of the wastewater project and in the project mm-hmm. budget, we've set aside funds for conservation.
Okay.
And related in the nexus with the wastewater project, it reduces flows to the treatment plant, and then therefore it can be the size can be reduced, and then it also mitigates the impacts on seawater intrusion.
Mm-hmm.
On the bathroom retrofits, also the county about a year and a half ago or a year ago adopted retrofit on sale ordinance. So, retrofits are now beginning to be done with the sale of property, but of course that takes a while. So by including it in the project, we'll get those retrofits done in a lot more timely manner.
John, you're getting pretty close to the end of your time.
Okay. Well, last slide here, and then I'm just going to turn it over to Pablo. So on the water recycling, the project will provide up to 1,200 acre-feet a year of tertiary recycled water and make that water available to agricultural interests and to the water purveyors for beneficial reuse. And also as part of the project, then the project will provide the purple pipe backbone that will facilitate these multiple future reuse options. And that line will run through the agricultural area and then into the community past several of the large reuse sites. Final question that we've received from your board is regarding our due diligence resolution.
And again, Pablo Ogren, just real quickly on this, I know I've spoken to your board on the due diligence resolution previously. That's the provision in Assembly Bill 2701 that at some point in time the County Board of Supervisors will either need to adopt a resolution to carry forward on the project or adopt a resolution to not do the project. Our primary concerns continue to be the permittability of the project, potential litigation, and of course with the economy since we've started on the project. Our concern is to be able to get funding for it. The private capital markets would seem pretty depleted, and so reliance on the State Water Board is going to obviously be necessary. But this idea of either implementing the project or not implementing the project, there is really a third scenario as well. What I anticipate you're hear during public comment, and we've heard a lot of, is that as part of the wastewater project, the county must solve the seawater intrusion issue. Mr. Miller is going to speak to the work that the purveyors are doing, and certainly we want to be able to align project efforts in helping on those. But if we get in a situation, whether through litigation or through permitting or some policies, that we cannot move forward with the wastewater project until the water management plan is done, then I would anticipate my recommendation to the board would just simply to be to defer on the due diligence resolution until the water management efforts caught up with the project efforts. And at this time, turn it over to Rob.
No. Right.
I have a couple questions. If this is,
sure.
If Rob is presenting a different part
yeah.
of, okay.
Right.
I have a couple questions
sure.
for John. I'm interested in the conservation and mitigation dimension of the material you just gave us. And just a comment on the survey. As a social scientist, I don't place a lot of confidence in surveys, but one thing that you did say was that there was a strong preference, I think, of all of the responses that you presented. There was a 67% response on retaining treated effluent in the basin. And, quick look at the numbers, and I did look at the EIR and response to comments and saw that quite a number of folks, including LOCAC, the elected kind of neighborhood-based community advisory committee, also were very concerned about the actual numbers that are being used to calculate those mitigation rates. But, on the surface, I see two-thirds of the water being carried out to or treated effluent going into spray fields outside of the basin, one-third going to percolation. And so I'm just I'm trying to understand how the mitigation factor of 2-to-1 seems to be a minimum kind of approach to maintaining groundwater in the basin and kind of being responsive to the fact that so many folks are so concerned about the design of the project and kind of that reliance on disposal outside of the groundwater basin. Can you comment on, I guess, let me clarify the question. The CEQA document contains a number of reports, all of which have contributed to the understanding of what the seawater intrusion rate is. And yet, when we read the responses from county and we read the overall description of the project, those numbers seem still to be varied. But I see that you've locked in on a 2-to-1 mitigation rate that's based on some set of numbers. And I'm wondering, at what point do we get to see a real firm set of numbers and get a better understanding of how we're going to achieve that mitigation for disposal of 2/3 of the ground, the treated effluent out of the groundwater basin?
Okay. Well, the mitigation measure is directly related to the actual deficiencies of the groundwater basin. You know, there's an existing deficiency even, you know, prior to the wastewater project in the lower aquifer overdraft condition of seawater intrusion. It's about 450 acre feet per year. While there's an existing deficiency in seawater intrusion in the lower aquifer, there's actually excess water in the upper aquifer that is lost as outflow into the bay and into the creeks. So the wastewater project factors are related to that deficiency in the lower aquifer, the project really needs to mitigate its impacts. It mitigates its impacts through two measures, and they both actually fully mitigate the impacts. So through conservation, it mitigates the impacts of the project. Also through Brodersen leach fields, it mitigates the impacts of the project on seawater intrusion. And the numbers work out that it then is a 2-to-1 mitigation. Relating to the upper aquifer, where that's where some of the septic tank discharges are collected and treated. The project needs to be able to handle, whether it's reuse or disposal, but needs to be able to handle the treated wastewater flows associated with the project. Within the community, there's excess water in the groundwater basin in the upper aquifer. The previous project was going to be disposing of all of the treated effluent in the upper aquifer. However, that previous project needed to have harvest wells because of the elevated water levels in the upper aquifer, there was concerns of surfacing groundwater, of flooding. So they had to have harvest wells throughout the basin. And ultimately, they did not have a plan for what to do with that harvest water. So potentially, that water could have ended up going out outside the basin. But, this project does not propose to dispose of all the water within the basin and then harvest it back out through harvest wells. It's proposing to dispose of the water that can be adequately handled in the basin and in the upper aquifer, and then the remaining treated wastewater as a fail-safe and as a dedicated disposal option, have spray fields outside of the basin. However, all of that recycled Title 22 tertiary recycled water will be available for beneficial reuse in the basin by the actual water users, which are the agricultural users and then the urban water purveyors.
So if the 2-to-1 factor can't be achieved, which I think that's what I read in so many responses from Slow Green Build and a couple of other kind of technically based comments, I saw that there's a range on what the loss of recharge to the basin is from the ceasing of the septic tanks. There's a difference of possibly 600 acre feet, maybe from 600 to 900, as much as 900 loss. And if seawater intrusion factors are greater, as some, the Cleethith and Associates report seemed to suggest that it was 100 acre feet more than the project design indicates. So these numbers seem to have some slide in them. And so my question is, if you don't achieve that 2-to-1 mitigation because there is a greater rate of seawater intrusion than you're calculating, which it seems That's very likely, given how much range there is in these expert reports that we're utilizing now. Seems like you're going on the conservative side, and I think seawater intrusion issues very much relate to this cumulative set of issues that don't seem to be very clear to me yet.
Madam Board Member, Pablo Ogren again. You know, certainly whenever anybody's working on studies and trying to evaluate underground conditions, there is going to be a range of estimates. The numbers that we have are consistent with the historical evaluations by the hydrogeologist. But in order to address the issue specifically, you know, how much can Brodersen really take and how much of it is going to make its way into the deeper aquifer versus how much might cause mounding and potentially hazardous conditions in the upper aquifer, it's simply then to put in a monitoring program. You put in a monitoring program, you monitor it, and then it's based on the empirical data of the changes in the groundwater levels that we will be able to then answer that question. But it has to be implemented. The idea is if at 400 acre feet per year there is no mounding, it just doesn't happen, and the amount that's seeping out to the bay is not as great as what the estimates are, then that means that Brodersen's going to be able to handle a higher level of disposal. And it will then, you know, we'll be able to, over time, come back to the regional board, request that we can then dispose of more water in there, make sure that the Department of Public Health is still comfortable that it's a disposal project and not a recharge project. So, you know, that's how really the only way that we can do it is to use the best estimates that are in the current studies, establish the monitoring program, and then watch and develop the empirical data in order to maximize the, you know, disposal and the use of the Brodersen site over time.
Yeah, thank you, and I appreciate your comments. I still think the question of monitoring for seawater intrusion is, I think, a very risky way of determining if you've found the best design and that you've maximized the opportunities for recharge and keeping the water in the basin. But I realize monitoring is a major component of Brodersen.
And does the infrastructure that you're going to install after Brodersen, is that going to be usable to increase your...
Correct. And in fact, the purple pipe that will come into town will have the capacity to bring 100% of flows that build out back into the urban area. And it's working with the water purveyors also that brings in the efficiency issue. How much of it is efficiency for Brodersen? How much is it efficient for use of urban reuse and those other measures that Mr. Waddell had identified are things that will be worked on over time. Again, building a project that has a foundation for maximizing coordination with the water purveyors while being able to move forward with the, you know, foundation project of a wastewater project within a reasonable period of time.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that I heard that correctly, that the piping is sufficient to handle all of the effluent production.
That
treated
is correct.
Effluent production off the site to bring it back into the urban boundary.
That is correct.
If you make that decision sometime in the future to increase your reusage in the basin.
Yes.
Okay.
My question is, you said you had a purple pipe that would handle all the discharge. Is that purple pipe going to handle the maximum discharge when you're at capacity?
At build-out, yes.
At build-out.
Yes.
That was my question. Because you could put a purple pipe in just to handle what is being treated at this point in time. And if you increase the capacity, then my question was, would that purple pipe will handle it? So the answer is yes.
Yeah, when we put the pipes in the ground, we want to make sure that they're going to handle build-out capacity.
Well, you'd be surprised how many don't.